Welcome back for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be exploring how British colonial rule in India from 1757 to 1947 really transformed Indian culture and society. I've got a whole bunch of historical accounts to look at. And I think it's kind of wild that the East India Company, in those early days, they had like almost zero understanding of the land and people they were trying to, you know, take over.
I was totally learning on the job.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of those lessons were learned at the expense of the Indian people. Just imagine, you know, trying to run a huge, complicated civilization like India when you barely speak the languages and you've pretty much spent your whole time stuck in coastal trading posts. Yeah, I mean, no wonder their early policies were all about profit and not really about fair rule, you know.
Right. And that kind of sets a bad tone from the beginning, doesn't it? It's like they just kind of fell into power without really thinking about the long-term consequences. Exactly. It wasn't until Warren Hastings became Governor General in 1772 that they even started to try and create a kind of more organized approach to governing. But even then, they just didn't get how complicated India's social structures really were. And that had a huge impact for a long, long time.
Which brings us to one of the biggest things that changed under British rule. How they totally messed with the whole social hierarchy. I mean, they basically flipped it on its head, right?
Oh, yeah.
They gave power to people who maybe shouldn't have had it, and it caused some serious rivalries that are still affecting India today.
Yeah, that's a really good point. A perfect example of this is those municipal boards they set up.
Oh, yeah. So they're supposed to, like, unite people and make them loyal to the British, but it seemed like they backfired.
Big time. They were supposed to bring people together, but they actually pushed them further apart.
How did that even happen?
Well, when they started having elections for those boards, they had these nominated seats, which they used to try and balance representation between different groups, mainly Hindus and Muslims. And instead of making everyone feel like they were part of one big thing, it ended up just turning into another way to control people by keeping those divisions nice and strong.
It's that whole divide and conquer strategy, isn't it? We see that popping up again and again.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the municipal boards. They used it in education, too, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The British saw education as this perfect tool to create a whole new generation of Indians who'd be more likely to accept their rule.
So, like, by teaching them English and all that?
Yeah. English language education became a huge thing. But at the same time, it pushed aside traditional ways of learning.
Almost like they were trying to make Indians more British, culturally speaking.
But kinda, yeah. They wanted Indians who spoke English perfectly and understood British customs and ideas and maybe even felt sympathetic to them. But it wasn't just about the language. They wanted to change the whole way people thought about knowledge and how it was shared.
But it didn't work on everyone, right? Didn't some people use this new education system to fight back against the British?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Take Surendranath Banerjee, for example. He was brilliant, excelled in this new system. He even tried to join the Indian Civil Service, the elite group.
Wow.
But they rejected him just because he was Indian. And that experience really pushed him towards becoming a nationalist activist.
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah. It shows how even the Indians who did well in the British system, they still hit a wall, you know? There was only so far they could go.
A glass ceiling?
Exactly. And Banerjee's story is just one example of how unfair the system was and how that anger fueled the movement for independence. It really makes me think about the legal system too. The British brought their whole legal framework to India and forced it on a society that already had these rich and complex legal traditions of its own.
I bet that was a huge shock for a lot of people. Like their whole world got turned upside down. Their ideas of right and wrong, how to settle arguments, how to deal with authority, all of that.
It was a massive change, those traditional systems, which were often based on local customs and community mediation. They were slowly replaced by these formal courts with laws written down based on British ideas. And while that did bring in some ideas of fairness and consistency, it also made the legal system a lot more complicated and expensive. And a lot of people, especially the poor and marginalized, couldn't even access it anymore.
Yeah, it's like they weren't just happy ruling. They wanted to, like, remake Indian society in their own image.
Yeah, exactly. It's a classic case of how even changes that seem good on the surface, like a new legal system, can just end up reinforcing the power of whoever's in charge. And that same urge to reshape India, it even extended to something super fundamental, land ownership. Mm-hmm. The British, with their Western ideas of private property, they really messed with India's traditional land system.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. They made some big mistakes, right? Like, they thought the local landholders were basically British landlords.
Exactly. They assumed that zamindars, who were traditionally responsible for collecting taxes and managing land, they thought they were just like British landowners, with total control over the land. And that misunderstanding, it led them to give zamindars way more power than they ever had before. And it ended up pushing out tons of peasant farmers. Imagine working the land for generations, and then suddenly you're landless and at the mercy of these newly powerful zamindars.
It just shows how even policies that seem well-intentioned, if they're based on the wrong assumptions,
right,
and they don't understand the local context, they can have really terrible consequences. And it wasn't just the legal and economic stuff, right?
Yeah.
British influence. It got into every corner of Indian culture.
It's impossible to talk about colonialism without looking at how it changed Indian culture and identity. But it's important to remember, it wasn't just a one-way street. It wasn't just Indians passively absorbing British culture. It was more complicated than that. There was resistance, adaptation, and totally new hybrid forms emerging.
So it's more like a collision, right? These two cultures, Indian and British, coming together and creating something new.
Exactly. Like imagine two rivers merging. They don't just blend into one smooth stream. There are eddies and currents, you know? Times when they resist each other and times when they flow together. And the river that emerges is unique, shaped by both of those original rivers. That's what happened in India under British rule.
That's a great way to picture it. So how did this cultural fusion actually play out? Can you give us some real life examples?
Sure. Take the Bengal Renaissance, for instance. In the 19th century, you had this incredible period of intellectual and artistic growth. Indian thinkers and artists, they were engaging with Western ideas, but at the same time, they were rediscovering and reinterpreting their own heritage. Think about someone like Ram Mohan Roy. He was pushing for social reform within Hinduism, and he used both Western Enlightenment ideals and ancient Indian texts to make his arguments.
So they weren't just rejecting everything British. They were taking the parts of Western culture that made sense to them and adapting them while also holding on to their own traditions.
Exactly. It was all about negotiation and innovation, creating something that felt both modern and authentically Indian. But this process of cultural change, it wasn't always easy. Sometimes it caused tension and conflict within Indian society as different groups struggled with these changes in different ways.
This reminds me of what we were talking about earlier, the rise of communalism. It feels like British rule, even if they didn't mean to, played a role in making religious and political divisions worse in India.
Yeah, for sure. The British, they often used that divide and rule strategy, sometimes on purpose, sometimes maybe not. But it definitely increased the tension between religious communities.
Right.
Especially Hindus and Muslims. And it wasn't just a matter of them not understanding Indian society. Sometimes it felt like they were deliberately trying to weaken any opposition to their rule. And that's something that still has an impact on India today.
It's sad to think about how decisions made so long ago by the British are still affecting India today. But we also have to remember that Indians weren't just passive victims, right? They resisted, they adapted, they created new cultural forms.
Exactly. It's crucial to avoid that simple narrative, where Indians were just helpless in the face of British influence. They were active participants in shaping their own culture. They were constantly negotiating, resisting, and innovating. And even in the midst of all the hardship and injustice of colonial rule, there were some positive consequences, even if they weren't intentional.
So it's about recognizing that it was a complex situation. There were both good and bad aspects to this period.
Exactly. While the main goal of British colonialism was definitely to benefit themselves, they did introduce new technologies and develop infrastructure like the railways. And Indians were exposed to new ideas, all of which contributed to modernizing India in some ways. Of course, these advancements weren't always evenly spread, and they were mostly designed to help the British, but they still had a lasting impact.
So it seems like British rule in India was kind of a double-edged sword, a mix of progress and exploitation, cultural exchange, and cultural imposition.
Yeah, that's a great way to sum it up. It was a period of huge transformation, both good and bad, with effects that are still being felt in India today. And as we keep digging into this period, I think it's really important to go beyond those general statements and see how these cultural changes played out on the ground in the lives of everyday people.
I agree. We've talked about the big ideas, the overall trends,
yeah,
but I'd love to get a more concrete sense of how British rule affected daily life. For example, you mentioned earlier that the British brought their own architectural styles to India. How did that change the look of Indian cities and towns?
Well, you can see it really clearly in cities like Calcutta, Bombay, and Madras, where you have these grand colonial buildings standing right next to traditional Indian structures. It's a visual representation of that cultural fusion we were talking about. A perfect example is the Victoria Memorial in Calcutta, this incredible marble building built in the early 20th century as a tribute to Queen Victoria. It's a stunning example of Indo-Saracenic architecture.
Indo-Saracenic architecture. Yeah. That's interesting. What is that exactly?
It's a style that developed in the late 19th century. It combines elements of British and Mughal architecture, the Victoria Memorial, with its huge dome, intricate carvings, and massive gardens. It's a perfect example of this hybrid style. It shows how skilled Indian craftsmen were. They were able to adapt their techniques to create something totally new and unique.
I bet it made quite a statement back then, this huge symbol of British power right in the heart of Calcutta.
Oh yeah, for sure. But it wasn't just these grand monuments. You can also see the influence of British architecture in more everyday buildings, like railway stations, post offices, government buildings. They often incorporated elements of classical architecture, like columns, arches, and pediments, because the British wanted to project this image of permanence and authority.
It's amazing how architecture can be used to show power and ideology, isn't it?
Mm.
The British. They weren't just building buildings, they were building symbols of their rule.
Exactly, and it's important to note that it wasn't just one way. We also see a response to this in the emergence of what we might call nationalist architecture. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Indian architects started deliberately incorporating elements of traditional Indian styles into their designs as a way of asserting their own cultural identity and pushing back against colonial influence.
So architecture became a way for Indians to express themselves and resist, to reclaim their own visual language.
In many ways, yeah. And this struggle over cultural identity was happening in other areas too. Literature, music, clothing, cuisine. The colonial period was this time of intense cultural exchange. Indians were absorbing and resisting British influence and creating these new hybrid forms in the process.
This makes me think of a quote I read by Salman Rushdie. He said, "The trouble with the British Empire was that it took its holidays in other people's countries." I think it captures that feeling of intrusion, you know, and the complicated relationship between the colonizer and the colonized.
That's a great quote. And it speaks to the multifaceted legacy of British rule in India. It wasn't just about oppression and exploitation. It was also a time of cultural exchange, even though it was an unequal one. And it left a mark on both sides.
It reminds us that culture is never static.
Yeah.
Right? It's always changing, shaped by forces both inside and outside. And in India, under British rule, we see those forces clashing, coming together, creating a cultural landscape that was both fascinating and incredibly complex.
Yeah, well said. And as we continue to try and understand the legacy of colonialism, I think it's so important to remember that complexity, to resist oversimplifying history, and just dividing everything into good and bad, victim and oppressor. We need to engage with the nuances, the contradictions, and the many different ways that the colonial experience continues to shape the world we live in.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. We've explored how British rule transformed Indian society, from the political and economic systems to the very core of culture and identity. And we've started to understand the lasting impact of this period, both the positive and negative consequences that still affect India and the world.
Yeah, and as we wrap up this part of our exploration, I want to encourage our listeners to keep exploring on their own, to look into how British rule specifically affected different regions and communities in India, to learn about the lives of ordinary people who lived through this time and the choices they made in the face of such enormous change. And as you do, remember that history isn't just a bunch of facts and dates. It's a glowing story that shapes who we are and the world we live in.
So we've been talking about all these big changes in Indian culture during British rule. But before we wrap up, I think it's important to zoom in a bit. You know, we've talked about the grand sweep of history, but what did these changes actually mean for the average person living in India at the time?
Yeah, that's a really important point to remember. These weren't just abstract historical forces. They had a real impact on people's daily lives.
For example, when we were discussing education earlier, you mentioned that the British pushed a very specific type of learning, focused on things like rationality and Western ideas of knowledge. But how did this actually change how knowledge was viewed and shared in Indian society? I mean, it wasn't just about learning English, right?
Right. Think about it. You had a society where knowledge was traditionally passed down through families, often tied to religious and cultural practices, storytelling, oral traditions. The British system, with its emphasis on written exams and standardized curricula, that really disrupted those traditional ways of learning.
So did that create tension between generations? Like, did those educated in the British system see the world differently from their elders?
Oh, absolutely. There were definitely tensions and generational gaps. Some Indians embraced these new educational opportunities. They saw it as a way to get ahead in the colonial system. They might have even felt a sense of pride in mastering English and excelling in this new system.
But for a lot of families, it must have been tough to navigate these two very different approaches to education.
For sure. Imagine a family where the grandfather is a respected village elder. He's steeped in traditional knowledge. And then you have his grandson attending an English language school. The grandson might start to question his grandfather's wisdom, see it as outdated or superstitious. And the grandfather might be suspicious of his grandson's education, worried that he's losing touch with his roots.
It's a powerful example of how colonialism could really shake up the social fabric, create divisions, not just between the British and Indians, but within families and communities themselves. This makes me think about the legal system, too. We talked about how the British brought their own laws to India and replaced traditional systems of justice. But how did this actually change the way people dealt with disputes or crime in their daily lives?
Okay, so imagine a village where disagreements were usually settled. Through mediation led by respected elders, they'd use local customs and a shared understanding of what was right. But with the arrival of British courts and codified laws, that whole process became way more formal, way more impersonal. Arguments that used to be resolved through discussion and compromise now had to be fought out in court, often costing a lot of money.
And I imagine it just gave the British more power, too.
Right.
Since they were the ones interpreting and enforcing these new laws.
Exactly. It's another example of how seemingly neutral changes, like a new legal system, could actually strengthen colonial control and weaken traditional forms of authority.
This brings up an interesting question, though. Did this shift towards a more formal legal system, did it have any positive effects on Indian society?
That's a great question, and it really highlights how complicated this period was. While the British legal system often served to protect their own interests, it did introduce some concepts that had a lasting impact on India. Ideas like due process, the presumption of innocence, the right to a lawyer, even though they weren't always consistently applied under British rule, these ideas took root during this time, and they helped shape India's own legal system after independence.
It shows that even in a system as unequal as colonialism, there could still be some progress. Some ideas could take hold that ultimately benefited Indian society. It's amazing how all these different things we've been talking about, education, law, social structures, architecture, art, even just daily interactions, how they're all connected, and how they all contribute to this bigger story of how British rule reshaped India.
It's like a giant tapestry of change, each thread influencing the others, reflecting this complicated mix of power, culture, and identity that define this whole era. And it's a story that's still unfolding today as India continues to deal with the legacies of colonialism and finds its own way in the 21st century.
It's incredible to think about, isn't it? As we finish up this deep dive, I'm really struck by just how complex and contradictory this period was. It's a history full of darkness and light. Oppression and resilience, the imposition of foreign ideas, and the fierce protection of cultural identity.
Absolutely. It reminds us that history isn't just a simple story of good versus evil or victims and oppressors. It's messy and nuanced. It's a tapestry woven from the choices and experiences of countless people trying to navigate an incredibly challenging and transformative time.
And it's a history that continues to shape us today as we move forward. It's so important to approach the past with humility, to acknowledge the lasting impacts of colonialism, and to learn from the mistakes of those who came before us.
Well said. And to everyone listening, I encourage you to keep exploring this fascinating period, dig deeper, find different perspectives, and really engage with this history and all its complexity. The more we understand the past, the better we can understand the present and work towards a more just and equitable future for everyone.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey. And to all our listeners, we hope you'll continue to explore and question and learn. There's always more to discover out there.